This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 2nd of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is The Gradient Scale of Handling Space, Energy, and Objects. This lecture is 65 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
This is December 2nd, second hour, afternoon. The first hour they covered this matter of locks, secondaries, and engrams. Just want to repeat here, it's a gradient scale, then, of ability to handle space, energy, and objects. It's a gradient scale thereof. You'll find out there are some cases who have finally come down to the point where they think they can handle very well the space, energy, and objects appertaining to being a Homo sapiens in one lifetime. They think that's the case. They become what you have seen occasionally as the wide open case. They record everything beautifully. They will run things beautifully on one lifetime. Don't let this wide open case, however, open up, or try to get him to open up any wider on existence. Because they won't very easily. They do it very badly. Your occluded case quite often is somebody who is trying to handle his whole track. Your high power occluded case is somebody who's trying to handle a whole track. He's trying to handle a whole universe, and of course it's all occluded. He realizes he can't handle it. At the same time, he's bound and determined he is going to handle it. And he knows he can't occupy any point of space, so he's going to occupy those points of space anyhow. And he's unwilling to let go of the points of space he's been in, because they might be valuable. And so he won't occupy the point of space where he is, because that's dangerous too. But it's still valuable, but it's not as valuable as occupying some other points of space he knows about. And he isn't going to give up anything. You're not going to find him handing up and saying, I just live one life. Mm-mm. No, sir, he's going to handle the whole track. Now, he gets kind of squirrely on this once in a while. He's so bound and determined he's going to handle a larger portion of the universe that he thinks the larger portion of the universe is interested sometimes in handling him. You get a computing psychotic. I'll tell you, my brain has just been wired by Western Union, and so the U.S. government can read my mind. And everything I think, it goes on a tape recorder in Washington, and they investigate this very thoroughly, and I'm trying not to think of the secret that I know, because if I think of that, then they will have me or something of that sort. Really squirrely. But that's the reductio ad absurdum of just that, and it is quite absurd. But these boys, you'll see a lot of them. And they're actually not as bad off as far as responsibility is concerned. They will handle and try and tackle much more responsibility than a wide open case will. But they're trying to tackle it on a big sphere. No little sphere for them. The wide open case is being perfectly content to handle just exactly this. They're in a very close agreement on MEST. And their agreement that they are there, they're there where they've been placed, and that they have recorded things just in this fashion, and that those things are in this order, and it's very easy to upset one of those cases. But they're quite easy to theta clear and bring on around to a wider point. They're quite easy because you can undo the track of agreement with them fairly smoothly. These cases appear to be quite dissimilar, actually. It's a problem with spheres of action. Between these two cases, your wide open case's sphere of action, you will find, is a very small sphere of action. And your occluded case is trying to make a much larger sphere of action. Actually, your wide open case gets in considerable trouble because their sphere of action is not this small sphere. Your occluded case also gets into trouble because their sphere of action is not the sphere of action that they can handle at that moment in that condition. So what do you find? You find theta overreaching itself. It's always trying to overreach itself. It's always biting off more than it can facsimilicate. And when you get a confusion in a preclear, you don't have to care too much about the minor structural mechanics of it. These all handle on the same thing. They handle in terms of space and energy and objects. You just enter into the case, you just know where he falls on the scale, on the theta clearing scale. And you just pick it up at that level and go on from there. You don't care whether this fellow's occluded, you don't care whether he's wide open, you don't care anything about that thought. Because the reason he's occluded and the reason he's wide open has to do with how much responsibility he is trying to take and how much of that responsibility he is taking. And it's a ratio. And when this ratio is bad, he's trying to take, let's say, 10,000 units of responsibility, and at the moment his state and environment is in this condition whereby he could only take 500 units of responsibility, he'll get him badly occluded. But he'd actually be badly occluded if he were capable. He were trying to take 200 units of responsibility in terms of space, energy, objects, this environment he was in and so forth was letting him in gently on the secret that he was only capable of taking over 10 units. Your wide open case maybe is taking over, believes it's capable of taking over 500 units, and it's taking over 500 units. You see, this society is rigged so that it's quite agreeable. If a person has agreed that I am one person in one lifetime, and I am living this, and my name is Jones, and there I am, and so-and-so, and that's all my full responsibility on the matter at the time of life where I am, and his environment tells him you were capable of taking over the responsibility of being Jones in one lifetime. It's all very nice, it's all very sweet. He's nuts, of course, but he is not occluded, which is important. What do you know? You have a harder struggle sometimes with the wide open than you have with the occluded case. Sometimes it works the other way around. You want to get this kind of a balance. You want to get as much responsibility digested as the person believes he can digest. If he thinks he has an enormously wide responsibility, well, you just better move him up in terms of responsibility. There's only one thing wrong with that. Is he's hungry. He's hungry. And he's every time you restore to him the ability to handle another 10 units of responsibility, he bites another 200. And as such, the auditor is sort of racing with this, and he sees this strange thing sometimes. His preclear is evidently increasing in tone, but is just as thoroughly occluded and loused up as before. And he keeps watching this and watching this. Now, it isn't the time to tell his preclear, now look, we have decided that you need a rest, and I think you'd better take a vacation or something of the sort, and don't worry about all these big affairs that you're trying to worry about now, and just let that sort of thing go and just take it easy. You're going to ruin him, because that's one of the steps that is taken as one of the control operations that is used on a person to get him into the automaticity schedule. It's telling him, you can't stand up to this, fella. That's what it's saying. It said, you've taken over just this much responsibility, you can't stand up to that. So it's reducing him down the scale. You just try to track along behind as the auditor and just let his capability catch up to his desire to do so. And in creative processing, we have the happy thing that we are aiming toward doing what he is trying to do. See, we're going in directly. So that catch-up is easier. If you were kept addressing that catch-up to the material universe, it would practically you'd never catch up with it. He'd just go wider and wider and wider and take in more and more responsibility and more space and try to digest more and more space, and you'd let him digest 10 more units and he wants to take 200 more, and you just keep going on this ratio until you've practically eaten up the whole massed universe. Now, maybe you could get there this way, and it's very possible that you could, but fortunately, it isn't necessary, because this person is operating under a delusion. He has never differentiated one single interesting point, and that is the messed universe is not his own universe, and he believes that his universe and the messed universe are identical. His own home universe, you might say, using an allegory here, became devoured so fast and had such an impact of shock to him that when he next looked around, he thought he was still in his own universe, but it had changed. And he's still under the basic postulates that he's running his own universe. He's still caught in that postulate. And so he can start anybody doing anything, but he can't change them in doing it after they've started, and he can't stop them after they've started. And this is completely flabbergasting to him. This is incredible. Now, in his own universe, he'd start something, he'd create something, start it in motion, change it, let it dwindle down a spiral maybe, and then destroy it. That was his power. And he all of a sudden finds himself, obviously, in his own universe. Obvious. And he starts something, and then he follows through the next step kind of doggedly, and he says, no, he says, we'll change it. Oh, no. Inertia and things like that set in. He, like a cannonball, he fires the cannonball, and he decides when it's halfway in its flight, it shouldn't land. So he says, all right, the cannonball will now go 20 feet to the left. Missed the target. And that damn cannonball goes right straight on through, and it hits the target. Boom. Or he fires the cannonball, finds out that his aim was wrong. Did you ever see anybody firing on a range? If you're watching an expert rifleman on a range, and he realizes that the instant he pulled that trigger was 6 o'clock, number 3 ring, he tries to lift that bullet. You can watch him just lift that bullet up into the target. He's trying to lift the bullet into the target because he knows he was low when he fired it. Did you ever watch anybody driving a car and they realize that the car is going just a little bit wrong or something of the sort? They try to take the steering wheel of the car and move the car over and make it go right. And messed hands can't do that. So that's very disgusting. It's upsetting. You start some action, and then the action goes off, and then all of a sudden isn't going in the direction that you intended it to go. So you reach out with everything you've got and try to right that action and change it into a better course, and it doesn't change. And that we call failure. And that is the anatomy of failure. The inability to handle that which has been started or which one has started after that course of action is entered. Inability to handle it after that course of action has been entered. What happens in a family? Guy has a little child, nice kid, baby, so on. He says, going to be president. What do you know? Turns out to be a subway conductor. Yeah, that's just no good. That is obviously can't happen in his universe, and it's obviously his universe. We know it's his universe. He knows it's his universe. Why, sure, he is himself, and all these other people around are people he obviously has made. And if you went around and put people on the e-meter and you ask them, did you make everybody that you've seen? So on, look at you sort of strangely, and he gets the strangest feeling. Yeah, I did. No, I know I didn't. But they don't do what you tell them to do. And now you get this little ghost coming in here, see? Everybody in this universe is trying to act as though he made it. And he didn't make this universe. He just kind of helped add to it. And he adds to it all the time by perceiving it. And he agrees to it all the time by perceiving it. And so he's never crossed that bridge. He's never suddenly said, I had a universe once which I monitored completely, and this universe somehow or other got left, and I found myself in a universe which I wasn't monitoring. And he's never crossed that bridge. Well, you don't have to tell him, really, or convince him that he has to cross that bridge. All you have to do is take him and show him that he has a universe. It's just as simple as that. You say, there's, all right, now mock up this, now mock up that, now let's have a little bit of that. All right, now let's take a cube of space. He says, what? Well, just take a little space in the room and saw out a little cube. I can't do that. It's the darndest inability. And he's suddenly shocked. He finds out that he has a lot of inabilities. It's quite shocking for a person the moment they find out in creative processing that they have some inability along the line of creative processing, because they just have gone on grandly assuming that the messed universe is that ability and it keeps on running. So obviously they're kind of doing it all the time, and they've just never added this up into the terms of, I have to go ahead and monitor my environment if I'm going to have any kind of a universe, or if I'm going to do anything with a universe. So you give them mock-ups, and you let them reassume the ability to create and control their own universe. When you do that, they get right back into what they were doing at the time when they got blown out of their orbit. And you redevelop this facility, and they all of a sudden can see, there's nothing wrong with my mind. There's nothing wrong with my ability. I can handle this body. I can handle these things. Well, for heaven's sakes, all this time, I just thought I'd lost my punch. Here, all those dogs that run down the street, they run down the street, and they start barking, and you say, don't bark. And they go right on barking. So obviously, I lost my touch. I mean, I'm not controlling my own universe anymore, and they never realized that it's a different universe. That perhaps would sound strange to you when you first run into this fact, but it happens to be a very interesting and very simple proof of it. Mock-up processing works. That's the easiest proof I know. You start doing this stuff, and if you do it according to the way you're supposed to do it, and so on, and all of a sudden, the fellow is better and better, and the schematics turn off, and everything goes along fine. He gets up tone scale, and he's better and better, and his disabilities all of a sudden decrease, and he gets bigger and bigger and more ambitious, and he's saying at first, to hell with this messed universe, don't want anything to do with the thing again. And then he's saying, well, hell, it's just another universe. Let's see, what do you do with universes? Well, let's saw a chunk off the left-hand corner of it and reverse it just for the hell of it this afternoon. And it's nothing to it. But let's enter this from another little gateway. There are many ways. Is the messed universe an illusion? Yeah, that's an interesting question. Is it an illusion? A lot of people have dashed around saying, it's all illusion, there is no such thing as matter, all you had to do is think right thoughts, and if you think right thoughts, why, you don't think left thoughts, and it'll all wind up someplace else in the end, it all belongs to somebody else. And they've said this, but there wasn't any good remedy for it. And they've said this a lot of times, and never backed it up. But let's back it up a little bit. Let's take a look at this. Let's find out first, what's an illusion? An illusion is something somebody made. Very technically, let's make an illusion that which the pre-clear makes. Let's just use that as a narrow downward. And let's call a delusion something somebody else made. Let's just categorize that handily. Now, a delusion could also be something the pre-clear has made that he has also said somebody else made. See, he made it, and then he said somebody else made it. You can call that also a delusion. But let's not worry too much about that, because that comes under the heading of automaticity. So let's just narrow this definition down to this. An illusion is something the pre-clear makes, and a delusion is something somebody else makes. Well, let's go from there. We know that other person doesn't have to know it's an illusion or delusion or anything of the sort. All right. Let's take another test. Take a good test. Let's take perception. One of the things your pre-clear is worried about above all other things, and that you as an auditor will worry about above all other things, is perception. We'll have to cover this just ad nauseum. Perception. But how do you make that wall get greener to you all of a sudden? And so forth. How do you step these perceptions up? Well, you know, that you can process out an awful lot of engrams about seeing color without making that wall get one bit brighter. You can agree with this mesh universe and agree with it and agree with it and agree with it and agree with it, and it doesn't get any plainer. In fact, you can agree with it and agree with it until it gets thinner and less distinct, and you become less active, and you become more and more lethargic and sort of like a stone or a piece of mud. You get more and more messed the more you agree with it. The more you agree with it, the more messed you get to me. Well, is that true? Yeah, let's look around at pre-clears and let's test them for terms of agreement with the meshed universe. By doing what? By taking a basic, simple, natural law, and let's put pre-clears on the tone scale, let's spot them accurately on the tone scale, and we'll find out that their degree of delusion and aberration, so on, we find out their ability or inability to control themselves, and just measure this pretty accurately, and then let's get them to mock up something and make it disobey a natural law. Let's make them mock up a billiard ball and fall and hit the ceiling. No, they know about gravity. And this character will just sit there and he'll take that billiard ball and he will try to make it lift. If he gets it up a little bit, it'll drop back again suddenly and he'll have the awfulest time. But he has a bad time trying to make the billiard ball fall upwards in exact degree that he's aberrated. You can plot the gradient scale of trying to make a billiard ball leap off the floor and hit the ceiling, and the amount of aberration in terms of engrams and secondaries and so forth that he has, and behavior and ability to control and reaction time and registry on the E-meter. You just take this curve after curve after curve, and we fit that one in with it, and we find out that this individual can't mock things up and make them disobey what he calls natural law, and which he does not differentiate as this, natural law of the physical universe. He is in a state of complete obedience to the meshed universe. Now, your hypnotized subject becomes in a state of complete obedience to the hypnotist. Let's consider the meshed universe a hypnotist, and let's consider this pre-clear subject, and find out that the subject is as deluded as the hypnotist wants him to be. And so we have over here then a direct application of this. We find out the degree of agreement with natural law is also the degree of aberration of the pre-clear. Fascinating, isn't it? Now this person's alertness and other things like that will add up on that scale. Well, that's very interesting, because we have hypnotism, which can be demonstrated as a phenomenon. And we show that the greater and greater agreement, all you do to hypnotize somebody is just make him agree, and after that he'll see anything. He'll do anything, he'll see anything. He agrees. All right. Now, let's consider then that aspect, and now let's take the next test. Is the meshed universe an illusion? Next test. Very neat little test. We find out that the ability to perceive an illusion determines the ability to perceive the meshed universe. How? By doing this. This person becomes more and more capable of producing and perceiving illusions and perceiving their character, depth, size, and their emotional tone. And as his ability increases in the production of illusion, his ability to perceive the meshed universe increases uniformly with it. What do you know? You have to be able to see an illusion before you can see meshed. This is awfully convincing stuff. Oh, boy. That's really convincing. And when you do that, that is one of the nicest tricks you could ever do. You say, now, you want to know if this stuff's real? All you got to do is stamp on it, and it'll tell you whether or not it's real. Now, that proves it's real. That proves that man came from mud. That proves anything you want it to prove. But the funny part of it is you've got a messed universe energy constructed foot hitting a messed universe energy platform. And, of course, when the two come together, they've agreed to go that way. And you perceive that they go that way. How do you perceive? Oh, that's just horrible. How do you perceive? Gee, this is when you find out finally how you perceive, you're going to be so ashamed of yourselves. You put this wall here, see? Do you do this? Just pocket a pocket a pocket a pocket a pocket a pocket. You keep putting this wall here, see? Put the wall there, and then you reach out and you feel the wall. You say it's there. Now you feel. Now you put a feeling called wall out here, and then you put a dimension from you to wall. And then you put a feeler out here, and you touch the wall, and you say, wall is there, and the reason the wall is there is I know it is there because I see it. Now, that see is just the sight band of perception, the photon wavelength of perception, which is a manufactured energy, which is a very wonderful gimmick. A fellow can manufacture energy any place. He can even manufacture photons for the sun to throw out. Now, let's take a look at this wall again, and we find out that we know it's there because we can see it. Well, we have to have photons in order to see it. Well, that's great, but you have to put a sight here in order to record the sight. Oh, I mean, when a fellow realizes he's doing that all the time, he realizes he puts a sight over on the mark. By the way, he sometimes in the processing and so on momentarily loses the ability to do so. You see, he's kind of fumbling for this ability. And he's unwilling to let this mesh universe ability, which is a beautiful piece of automaticity, if there ever was one, just gorgeous. And he's unwilling to be too brash about this, but we're practicing this, you know, with a pre-clear, with mock-ups. We have him reach out, put a mock-up out here. All right, now feel the cheerfulness coming from that mock-up. He does. Now feel the intensity of light coming from that mock-up. He knows. He puts it over there, and he gets it back again, and he puts it over there, and he gets it back again. He's going through this. All of a sudden, he looks at the room, and he goes right through the wall. So he quickly puts the wall there and gets it back again. He says, and then he said, wait a minute. I put the wall there and I'll get it back again. Why don't I put a wall 2 feet this way from it and get it back again? He does. It works. So he puts the wall back where it belongs, is perfectly comfortable about it thereafter. It's all right. It's there when he wants it there. Now, whether or not a person can be running down the street in a car and see a big brick wall standing in front of him, and he perceives that brick wall, and he neglects to perceive the brick wall, see, neglecting to put it there, it would be merely occluding it. It's there. You've agreed with a lot of other people, and they work all the time putting it there. And you're in this big agreement, so you just take the lines from them, actually, and you run your car into the brick wall, and the fenders get all dented, and everything just goes to the devil, and so on. And you say, now, if I just, let's see, is it possible for me to put, let's see, we'll take that brick wall and we'll move it a block down the street so we won't hit it. You do this in the last instant, just before the crash. We just pick this brick wall up and put it a block down the street. Don't do it. Don't do it for a good reason. If you really get your horsepower up, it'll go a block down the street. And you will just bust the living daylights out of an awful lot of people's, what, reality. In other words, you will break their agreements to smithereens. Don't do it. Of course, you never try to do this. You never try to do this. This is not one of your penchants. Did you ever ask a pre-clair? All right, did you ever run into anything with a car? The fellow says, yeah. All right, now you say, now let's take that Vizio you have, that stopped up. You say, yeah, well, I do have a Vizio of it. Now, you say, well, what is the Vizio of it? It's just an instant before the crash. You still got this picture of the brick wall, the tree, the other car, so on. It's just an instant before the crash. How do you finish up that picture? Now, you can fool around all you want to in processing it and running it back and forth. You don't find this picture washes up very easily. Give him a mock-up of the same tree and let him finally do with it what he was trying to do. And at the instant you succeed in that, he no longer has that picture. But I don't know any other kind of processing to wipe out that confounded picture. It just sits there, and it sits there, and it sits there. He stopped time, evidently. Just an instant before the crash, he tried to pick up the tree and so forth and put it a block down the road so he couldn't hit it.
He didn't stop time for a good reason. There isn't any time to stop, which we'll go into. But there was an object there, and changing the place of this object in space was his intention. His inability to do it tells him that he hasn't changed the object in space, so he still sits there and he's got a facsimile of it and he still looks at it as not having been changed in space, and he looks at it as a big failure. Just drill him. Have him mock up a toothpick, and put the toothpick there. Now let's mock up a toothpick again, and let's put the toothpick 2 inches further. Now let's mock up a toothpick again, and let's put this toothpick 2 feet away. He says he keeps slapping in and trying to hit me in the face. He says, that's all right. That's all right. Now let's get that toothpick there and let's just hold it there 2 feet from you. You got it? Now turn it blue. Now turn it red. Now send it over the right. Send it over the left. Yeah, he says it stays there now. He's got the toothpick. Good. Good. Now move it an inch further away. He says it kind of comes back toward me. You say, well, now move it an inch further away, and then move it a foot closer to you. I don't like to do that. You say, now, come on, let's just move it a foot closer to you. All right, but it just keeps right on coming. All right, put two toothpicks up there and have them go through and appear on the other side of your head. Well, he says, well, all right. Now, put two more toothpicks in front of you and put those through your head and put them on the outside. Okay, put two more toothpicks and put them behind your head. All right. Two more toothpicks. Well, sure. All right, now put those two toothpicks out there. You got them? Okay, done. All right, now move them 1 inch further away. All right, I've done that. Well, now move them a foot further away. Well, okay. Now move them clear down the next block. All right. Now put a tree there. Okay. Now move it a block further down the street. Okay. Now put a car there. Okay. Move it a block further down the street. Nah. It keeps running back up to the same place. Well, take the car and throw it behind you. Put another car there, throw it behind you. Put another car there, throw it behind you. Put another car there, throw it behind you. Put another... Hey, oh, I got it. I'm throwing them behind me. A big junk pile back there now. All right, put a bomb... put a bomb in the middle of the junk pile and blow it up. Okay, got that? Now, put a car in front of you and move it a block down the street. Okay, I can do that. Where's the picture of the accident? What accident? You let him do what he was trying to do, which was to pick up the tree, the car, the brick wall, and he knows he can do this in his own universe. And that's all he's interested in rehabilitating, is his ability to do it in his own universe. The only reason he's hanging on the mast is because he has the disability of not being able to do it for himself. Mast is a secondary manifestation. You take this stuff, money. A fellow has gotten the idea that he needs money to acquire. That's very interesting. You take most of your pre-clears and you tell them to mock up a quarter, and they won't get a darn thing. It'll be blurry, and it'll be this way, and it'll shift around. And you say, all right, now let's just take a slab of silver. They can do that. Move that around. Take a slab of gold, slab of copper. Move those things around. Shove them around. Play chess with them. Get them going in circles. Move them this way. Move them that way. Blow them all up. Oh, I can't do that. Well, all right, stack those three over there, and let's take a whole bunch of them now, and let's just take 6 bars of silver and 6 bars of gold and 6 bars of copper. Got them? Put them over there. Okay, now let's take 6 more bars and 6 more bars and 6 more bars and put them over there. Got that? Okay, now let's have a big truck come up to the door and start unloading bars of gold into the front room. Got that? Got that? Put them all in boxes and put them up there. Okay, now have them back down the alley, a whole fleet of trucks back down the alley, and start unloading gold into the backyard. Now get it all stacked up there. Now put a bunch of guards out there. Well, I don't need any. There's too much gold around here already. Well, okay, take one tiny little pinpoint of gold now. You got it? Now blow it up. You can sort of see the fellow look around cautiously to make sure he's got that backyard full and the front yard full, everything else. Well, we can dispense with this little piece. And he'll go, pow. He'll say, He'll feel like, just exactly possibly like Jim Fisk or whoever it was that used to walk down the front steps of the stock exchange when he'd had a good day and light his cigar with a $100 bill. He feels just that way about it. All right, you take that thimble full of gold and you blow it up.
You take a bar of gold and you blow it up. You take two bars of gold and you blow it up. And all of a sudden, he's starting to get kind of unwilling. So you have another fleet of trucks come up and and fill the other backyard and the both sides. And you make the whole room full of gold and the walls full of gold and all the furniture full of gold. And you make it, then stack the whole room full of silver. And you say, the hell with him. He'll blow the room up. And he'll blow the backyard up and he'll blow the front yard up. And so on, he's all set. Sure, he's getting back toward his own universe. That's all he's interested in. Now, when you get this process going, the next thing, you take paper money. You'll probably have a little less trouble with it. You take some more paper money and some more paper money, and you get stacks of it. And the first thing you know, every time you get the paper money down in front of the pre-clear, it'll start flickering right out of the bill case and just come up faster. You have him mock up his body out there and mock up a pile of paper money, and it's just like a hurricane hits the stuff. It just goes swoosh. You'll get him after a while so you can stack up paper money all over the place. And the funny part of it is he'll have to do a little bit of orientation. He'll look into his pocketbook, and it looks like what it is, confetti. Worse than what it is, it'll look like something a little bit worse than he was mocking up. But it has a buying power, and it has a lot of other things, and he'll rehabilitate his perception and his viewpoint on it. Now, that's interesting to notice, though, that you may have had an awful time with some pre-clear just beating his head in, just consistently and continually trying to orient him so he's sensible and rational on the subject of money. He's mad on the subject of money. The process which I just gave you knocks it out. That's odd, isn't it? Is the messed universe an illusion? Well, the handling of illusion solves the confounded universe and solves the problems which are contained wherein it, whereas if you continue to treat it as a reality, the problems don't solve. Ha! Is it an illusion? Now, this is not necessarily conclusive proof. Not necessarily at all. It could be a very interesting sort of a proof if you went around shattering people's agreements, shattering their reality. If you were to walk down the street 10 feet off the ground out here without walking on any pavement, but there you were walking along 10 feet off the ground and everybody could see you doing this, you'd have quite a crowd. The reality would be very badly broken. Well, the same way, if you suddenly started extending your hand and there was a $10 bill in your hand, you gave it to somebody, and you come down the street and you see a pan out of there, and you just say, well, have a 10. There's nothing in your hand, and there's a 10, and he takes the 10, and it says Abraham Lincoln or George Washington or whoever it is. It's on a 10. And Benjamin Franklin, oh, that's on hundreds. So anyhow, if you could do that, and that money went into circulation, that would be quite a test. That would be the test amongst tests, wouldn't it? That would really be a test. Of course, you want to think of the consequences of this. If you suddenly started doing that, and that money, you had to be good enough to produce it, and that money would have to have the proper treasury serial number on it and everything else and be acceptable to the U.S. government, all that. Do you realize what the level of responsibility of that is? The level of responsibility of the issuance of money, to have the money acceptable, is to be the government of that country. And if you're willing to take on this level of responsibility over here, you can do that one. But that's the test. It would be the final test to many. But what do you know? It's not a test at all. That's not a test. It just is the way they've been testing things in science. They've said, all right, now so-and-so. Now, does it agree over here in the physical universe? Oh. No. But what's science studying? Science is studying the physical universe. So they're studying what tests in comparison with the physical universe. You get that as a differentiation? Therefore, the physical universe is the test of this which we're investigating, because we're investigating the physical universe. Now, don't get that snarled up with what we're doing. We've got experience. We want experience. And we're testing experience. So if we're testing experience, then let's test it by experience. And let's remember that experience, just open up the mind a little bit, and remember that experience doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the physical universe. experience doesn't necessarily. You see, that would be an awful arbitrary to enter into it, say that the only experience that anybody could have would have to do with the physical universe. Well, you know immediately that that isn't true, because you know that a man is as alive as he has dreams. Is the physical universe an illusion? You can test this one. If a man loses his last dream, you've got a corpse on your hand. Don't kill a man with bullets, because you don't really kill him at all. We can test that and prove that on an e-meter. No, sir. Kill him by taking his dreams away, one by one. Take his goals and dreams. What's the commonest thing that you hear from people? I lost my illusions. I haven't any illusions anymore. They know what's wrong with them. They've lost their illusions. They're telling you just that many words. That was them. They lost themselves when they lost their illusions. And a man is dead when the last of his dreams is dead. And that's about the long and short of it. You go down here in Skid Row, look at the bums. You just take that line of bums, and you'll find out that they don't have any dream anymore of having anything. There isn't anything they can be or anything except the bum. We go down to the prison, we find out that the criminal uniformly has lost his self-respect. And when we ask him what his self-respect is and ask him rather closely, he says, one day I found I couldn't trust myself. How did you find that out? I struck my mother. If you put it on an e-meter, you'll find that just as answering up along that line. Or I found out that I betrayed a comrade. I did something. Therefore, I was no longer worth anything. He didn't measure it in terms of how much mess he had. The lousiest criminal down here didn't measure it in the terms of how much mess he had or was. He measured it in this degree. He says, I have discovered that there was bad experience for which I was cause, and I thereafter cannot be anything because I won't permit myself to be anything. And there's your criminal. You want to start processing criminals anytime? They're very easy to process. All you have to do is rehabilitate a man's belief in himself. It's so simple. He's lost it. And what was that belief in self? It was the ability to garb self with an acceptable illusion. An illusion which other people would accept. In the messed universe, that always has to be added on and is an arbitrary limiter. That which other people can accept. That is not true of one's own universe. It only has to be acceptable to himself. And that's, he knows that. That's a level of certainty. Does he accept it himself? Yes or no. There's no question mark. Is it accepted by somebody else? One of the big tricks in the messed universe is prove it, or we don't accept it, or we'll agree to that if you'll agree to this. Trades in terms of illusion. And so you get the universe going. All right. The world around a child is a bright, bright world. A child comes in with the idea that he is free. He has a new start. He's got a new chance. This time he will do something in the universe that is spectacular. He will make a go of it, and so on. He's got that new hope. And that child goes downhill and becomes impossible to the degree that he loses that hope. And the things are very bright to that child at first. He can, in other words, put a perception there and perceive it with great facility. The world is beautiful to him. He has a certain freedom, and so on. And then they start working on him. They say, Johnny, why do you overwork your imagination? You know very well that there's no battleship out there in the backyard. He knows there's no battleship out in the backyard. He's never made a mistake on it in his life. He wants to put a battleship out in the backyard. Let him put a battleship out in the backyard instead of making this. Why does this messed universe and people who really get mestified, why are they so insistent that we not imagine anything? Why? Because if a fellow really started out along this line, they know, basically, they know that the only way that they can be smashed to smithereens is to all of a sudden be presented with an illusion which they have to accept. And that's a terrible danger.
Why, Johnny's liable to come in the house, and he's dangerous. He keeps imagining he shoots tigers out there in the backyard. Now, what if he went out there in the backyard and he thought up this tiger and he brought the tiger in the house? That's actually a paramount thought. Actually, you investigate Mom and you'll say, now, what did you used to think up? Well, he used to think up these terrible things, these bad men and everything else, and all this, and he used to think this. Well, what objection is there to that? Oh, but they're terrible people. She's gone right off along the line. She knows exactly what might happen. If Johnny were really hot, he could think up Jesse James, and Jesse James would come in there, and there probably wouldn't be any silver left in the house. And if the battleship Missouri got placed out in the backyard, by gosh, it'd be in the backyard. And it's so hard to grow flowers on turrets. So, is it an illusion? Well, here we're on a communication level. An illusion has been defined in the past as something that didn't exist. Therefore, an illusion has no existence. Well, that everybody kind of understands that word illusion to mean something that doesn't exist. And when you say something has no existence, you mean something cannot be experienced. Can I show you immediately that you can experience an illusion? That illusion exists. So existence can be an illusion, can't it? Here it is. It can exist because it can be experienced if we define illusion to mean something which can be experienced. You have to have something that can be experienced before somebody can agree upon it. There has to be an experience there. So when we talk about experience, we're talking several cuts above the mess universe. We're talking way up the line from the mess universe. We're talking above the line of energy, space. Because an idea does not have to exist in space. You know that. You don't have to have space to have an idea. When you make an illusion, its first requisite is to have space. Well, space is an experience. So what one makes, one can experience. What is made can be experienced. So you can make anything, and it would exist if it could be experienced. I'm not trying to just shuffle words around. I'm just trying to get a better communication level on this thing. It is not fair to say, all right, I haven't any better word than illusion. I could call it a whumjit, and we'd probably come to a better agreement on this. When I say that wall is an illusion, I don't say that wall cannot be experienced. That wall can be experienced. It obviously can be experienced. And when I say it doesn't exist, I am only saying it does not necessarily, arbitrarily have to exist independent to experience. That's all. It's independent. Now, it's a very funny thing about space and about things like that. People can make an agreement, and that agreement just keeps on rolling. That doesn't say you don't have to feed that again. You don't have to feed more agreement to it in order to perceive it some more. And if you really want to look something over, you want to go over and get it, what you say, close. In other words, you want to look it over real good. What's that mean? I want to experience it better. So if we just lay off any confusion about is this illusion or what do we mean by illusion, we merely mean by illusion the technical definition, that which one makes which can be experienced. And what do we mean by reality? We mean that which is made and which is commonly experienced by agreement. That which is made, or one or many make, and can be commonly experienced. That we will define as reality, just for our purposes. And what's delusion? That which somebody else makes and tries to push off on us as an arbitrary, necessary experience. Arbitrary, necessary experience. So, what we're trying to do with processing
And with this slight dissertation on illusion here, what we're trying to do with processing is to give the pre-clear back a choice. We're giving him back his power of choice on whether or not he has to experience this. And we're giving him back that by one route only, and that's rehabilitating his power to create and experience a universe. If we can get him to create and experience a universe independently, the odd part of it is he has greater choice on his ability to experience this. It isn't as bright as people tell him it has to be. It's as bright as he wants to make it. An awful lot of people have an awful lot of trouble with this stuff, you know. People go around, they say the light's too bright, the dust is blowing too hard, I'm too warm, it's too cold, I'm uncomfortable, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm this, I'm that, this. They're complaining all the time about an arbitrary necessity to experience. They're saying, I don't like to experience that dust. I don't like to have to experience, without any consultation with me, this, that, warmth, heat, cold. It's just these darn arbitrary experiences that I just don't like it. That's all. Now, how do you get up their level of selection? By letting them run away from them? No, because to run away from something is to agree even further, not only that it exists, but that it exists and is dangerous. So you see, that's an extension of agreement. You know that you can frighten a person suddenly and they go into an hypnotic trance? And if you were to frighten a person suddenly and to say something real fast to them, you'd lay in a beautiful engram. You show them, this is dangerous. They desert it quickly. You put right in that spot an experience. When they try to move back over and take over that spot, they just move right back into that. And that thing commands them thereafter. That is the trick on making an agreement. You could say, you can watch this in experience. People become that which they are afraid. People create that which they fear. It may be that this here's a big lumbering crane, and it goes up and down the dock and loads ships. And one day it gets an operator who says, that crane is dangerous, it's liable to do this, it's liable to do that, and you never know, and you tell somebody else that on the dock, and this crane's dangerous, it's liable to do this, it's liable to do that. You just never know what that crane's going to do, and somebody else comes along, and he says, you know, that crane, that's just badly made, and it's dangerous, and it's liable to do this. And then we get a new operator, and this new operator's told this as he comes on the thing, and he gets a hold of these controls, and he says, I'm handling something that's dangerous, and it's not liable to do what I want it to do, and I can't exert my will on it, really, and these controls might not control what they're supposed to control, and so he drops a load of steel on a bunch of longshoremen's heads. This follows. He finally has manufactured something from which he can flee. He's told that this exists that way, and he will just break his neck to make it something which justifies his fear of it. He's got to have it be something dangerous if he's afraid of it, and the more dangerous it is, the less cowardly he is if he's afraid of it. So he'll magnify that. He just juggles, in other words, function by magnifying and subtracting experience. Now, let's define experience. Experience is not necessarily space, energy, and objects. It's not necessarily space, energy, and objects. It just happens to appear that way from where we sit here in the messed universe. Because the messed universe is made out of an agreement on space, energy, and objects. But at the second you think that that would be the end product, because an experience could pass as a postulate from a mind without the existence of space. So a postulate could be an experience, couldn't it? But you think of things, postulates, as something that start experience. Now, the funny part of it is that a postulate is a gradient scale itself. It's not an absolute thing. When you start to undo postulates and you use the action cycle of postulate processing, you'll see what I mean. You will be flabbergasted at the amount of mess there is wrapped up in postulates. and how thoroughly invested a person normally is in making postulates. He isn't making them free. He discovers for the first time that his decisional level is an enslaved thing to mist when he starts to use an action cycle of postulates. Now, you could get a postulate up here to where it existed as just a pure experience that has nothing to do with action. So when we say experience again, we're having a little communication difficulty. And experience is normally has to do with action, doesn't it? Well, let's just orient that just a tiny bit better and say experience is merely a test of existence. An experience is a test or perception of existence. You know, they say this fellow can't work in this store very good because he hasn't got any experience. Well, they mean he hasn't learned data connected with this store. That's what they mean. So the datum isn't really existing in time and space. It's been that way about stores for an awful long time, and it'll be that way about stores for an awful lot more time. So you haven't spotted, when you said his experience, you haven't spotted really data that exists in time, have you? Now, you don't have to bat your head out with this. I'm doing this mainly for clarification so that we don't go adrift anyplace on the thing. Because what we're doing is very simple. A universe can be constructed of space, energy, and objects. Any universe can exist. It can be perceived. Therefore, it can exist. This is the old Descartes stuff going round and round, only they're on a slightly cruder level than we're operating. Because, help me, we're operating with positive proof. We can prove this experience. How do you prove an experience? By experiencing it, of course. So that's where we are. Now you can then make a universe out of space, energy, and objects. You could also make a universe which consisted of five-dimensional space, what we might call projectivity, and destructeds. You could say after this object has been in existence for a certain space of time, it automatically vanishes. Therefore, it has a delimiting factor. And this five-dimensional space assists this because anything which drifts into the warp areas of the five-dimensional space becomes a destructed. So only that energy which is in the free areas at the time it's in is. Now, that is, so therefore, we've got a universe that is going. You've got a new universe there for that day. And then it would go click. You'd have a new universe there for that day. You see, you can't fit five-dimensional space together, so there'd have to be holes. And as it shifted, why, the stuff would get into these holes, which, of course, didn't exist. So there couldn't be any space there by definition, but there could be space there. It doesn't matter. I mean, this doesn't sound silly, but you can do anything you want to. One of the nicest tricks there is to give a pre-clear mock-up a little piece of space here in front of him. And then put something in it. Put a doll or something here in the middle of it. All right, you got a doll in the middle of it. Now, let's take the two extremities of that piece of space and let's give them a twist. Now, let's twist them the other way. What happens to the doll? And the fellow says, well, the doll. Doll crinkles when I do that. That's interesting, yeah. You say, all right, now collapse the space a little bit. Bring it out again. Got that? Now give it another crinkle so you know it's your space. Okay. Now just to be sure that it's your space, put a warp in it. Right here in the middle of it, put a black line, a black sheet. And there's dimension inside the black sheet, but the sheet has no dimension in relationship to your space. So it says, all right. Now, the way you do this is you get this little doll walking along now, and every time this little doll passes through this black space, it does a time shift and appears on the other side as a bear. Faust says, all right. Okay, now let's turn the bear around and have the bear walk back
and pass through that black space and walk out the other side of Dahl. You got that? Yeah, that's very interesting. Let me get some. Wonder what's in that black space. Well, of course, there's nothing in that black space. But he's beginning the cycle of automaticity on his piece of space. Now, he can make that piece of space exist. And if he had inhabitants in his universe, this would be the customary things. When you walk down the walk, you could walk down the walk in your bathrobe, but when you hit the sidewalk, you were dressed for the office. And that happened because of a warp that is across everybody's sidewalk, and he could sell them the warp. Now, would you like to buy some warp space? I would say, sure, I'd love to have some warp space. What kind of warp space do you want, though? What's to happen? Is this the kind of warp space that you go into and come out of the other side of fully dressed? Well, we have that, but there's an improved kind that doesn't necessarily work the opposite direction, so that when you walk home from the office, you don't necessarily get on the other side of it and appear in your bathrobe and walk up the steps. It doesn't undress you. That's just a dressing warp. And that's much superior, but that costs a little more. All you'd have to do is just get everybody to agree that this is what's happening, and this has become very usual. Be routine. That's all. You just have some warp space. In the first place, there's no space there unless the person postulates there's space there. Space is a viewpoint of dimension, but we'll be covering that much more exhaustively. But what's this warp? Now, he knows he's got space. And actually, he does know he's got space. He knows as much as space. He knows that he's got space as much as one can know that he's got space when he can see the thing crinkle and he puts a warp in it. And if he can expand or contract the space on dimensions, it's obviously his space. He's expanding and contracting it, isn't he? Well, that's the definition of space, dimension. If he can change the dimension of space, he obviously, it belongs to him. It's all there is to it. If you can make this wall move 4 feet close to you and move back again, you can own that space. And it's a very odd thing, but a person's mock-ups have a tendency to get much less perishable when they're in his own space. He'll notice this the first time with a considerable start. He'll discover this quite accidentally. He'll just be looking at his piece of space there, and he'll say suddenly, "You've just made a piece of space, and you just haven't told him any more about it, and you know, it's brighter." And you say, "Yeah." "Now I blow it up." He's been blowing up things very successfully. This is different. This is his. So, you've got to make a lot of them and have him blow up one. Make him make a lot of them, then make him make a little one, and then blow the little one up. And the handling of one's own space and one's own dimension is actually a rougher problem because one is at first much more serious about it. Because one went down the tone scale of his own universe clear to the bottom before he entered the messed universe, and now he's going down the messed universe clear to the bottom. And he's almost there. The next universe out, I understand, is full of dragons, all named George. And the place starts in with everybody being missed. And that's an angel. And, of course, religion in this universe has nothing to do with missed. They never pass a collection plate. They never say, preserve your missed, bury your missed, we will pray for your missed, or anything like that. And... Well, anyway, this next new universe is pretty rough. It's pretty rough. So I'm going to say that if you can make the pre-clear go up tone scale on his own universe before he goes up tone scale on this universe, you've moved him back one universe already. Now, maybe there's a universe ahead of that. If there's a universe ahead of that, though, why, boy, the amount of freedom must be so great in it that I wouldn't think it could be policed. And if a universe couldn't be policed, it isn't worth having. Because you got to have cops, everybody knows that. Because no ethic level could possibly exist that would prohibit the cops. No. You always got to have police. So if you had a universe that was so free and so ethical that cops couldn't exist in it, why, it naturally wouldn't be a universe you could own, so you wouldn't want very much to do with that. I mean, this is circular logic, but I mean, it's good logical stuff for this level of the tone scale of this society.